Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Happy Cinco de Mayo, everybody. Happy Taco Tuesday. A perfect combination of events today. We've all got our menus ready. Going to have a little afternoon fiesta. Key, I know you said you're thinking 4 o'clock or thereabouts. I'm thinking maybe earlier. I'm thinking maybe we turn this into a noon thing and kind of roll it out through the rest of the day.
It's too hot, though. That's the problem out here. It's going to burn up. We're going to get close to 100 degrees, and I'm really not trying to sit out in the heat.
Sit inside.
No, because I think I'm gonna do the driveway behind the gate with neighbors in the parking lot. I mean, in the driveway, social distancing. So I'm gonna move some of the patio furniture to the front of the driveway. And I think we're gonna congregate in the driveway.
So your neighborhood is doing that, sit in the front yard and shout at each other across the street thing?
Well, no, not across the street. They can sit in my driveway. The driveway is big enough where we could get 6 feet apart and still be fine.
Oh, so you're having a little driveway party. I like it.
Yeah, a little driveway party for our kids to kind of ride their bikes or whatever they want to do. So once the sun kind of starts to cool down a little bit, I think that's the way to go, because I'm just sitting in the house. Much like the people in Laguna Beach got tired of sitting in the house. They want to go to the beach. I want to go outside my door. There's only so much ESPN and the ID network. Like, I done seen the same dude kill the same woman 50 times. I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Or the same woman kill the same dude 50 times. Like, how many times I'm going ID network. I swear to you, I went from ID network to OWN network. In the same damn episodes is on. I'm like, oh, man, come on, man. I just seen this dude kill her yesterday.
I got nothing. Oh, my gosh, Keith. I mean, that's...
No, it's true, though. No. I'm moving from all network.
Hold on a second. How long have we been stuck inside? 2 months now, give or take?
2 months.
I don't know if I've heard anything be a better description of the times that we're living in right now than I've watched the same dude kill the same woman so many times. It's just perfect. It's exactly
it's the ID network.
So
I don't watch,
man.
The same people do the same crimes. Damn near every day on different channels. You know, it's like, okay, well, I saw that on ID. Well, I saw that on Oxygen. Now I'm moving to OWN Network. Oh, Dateline. Okay, here we go. You know, it's just like, I need some new action.
That's going to be a quote somewhere at some point when we go back and try to write the history of the coronavirus.
Travis,
that needs to be written
sure
down.
We put it in its proper context. That's the important thing. You don't want to drop that just out of the blue.
Well, look, at the end of the day,
we set it up.
Look, put it this way. If any fool out there think that I'm talking about something other than TV, then that's on them.
Exactly.
I don't get caught up into that.
Oh, man.
I'm looking at right now. I'm looking at Good Day LA on KTT TV, and Laguna Beach and San Clemente has opened up, and people are running around in the pool, I mean, in the ocean, enjoying it. Looks gorgeous, though. I mean, it really does. You guys sure know how to get something done when you want to get it down in the OC.
We've had enough, Key. We're ready to go outside. We need to get back into the ocean and go to bars in San Clemente, I guess. I don't know why we decided we could do that.
I saw the bar open in San Clemente yesterday, and it didn't look like social distancing. It looked like elbow to elbow. I didn't understand that one, but, you know, y'all do it different down there.
Indeed, indeed. What do you make of Frank Gore signing with the Jets? I mean, is he just going to play in the NFL until he's 80?
Man, if they're willing to pay him to give him 2 yards in a – it ain't even 3 yards in a cloud of dust no more. It's 2 yards in a cloud of dust. If they think that's going to help them become successful, then maybe he gives a locker room present. He's a change of pace back from Le'Veon Bell. He's a leader. He's a veteran. He knows how to win. He knows what it's going to take to work. And if his body can hold up and he wants to continue to do it, why not? But this is one of those – this feels like one of those at the end of the line. We brought you in, but we're not guaranteeing you a roster spot, and we're probably going to cut you after preseason.
I was just going to say, do you think I know he's signed, but do you think he makes the team?
That's what it feels like to me. I don't know that he makes the team. I don't know his relationship with Adam Gase or any of those other guys that's there – But it certainly seems at this point in time that it's not much that he can give the New York Jets.
So he, I agree with you on there. He's at the end of the line. Cam Newton is not at the end of the line, but he's still looking for his team. And there's, it's not a rumor or anything like that. It's just more of a, hey, what about Cam Newton on the Rams to back up Jared Goff? The Rams do not have an experienced backup. They have John Wolford right now, who would be their number one backup at this point. Blake Bortles was not brought back. Jared Goff is a really durable guy, so you would assume that you're probably not going to need him. But Cam Newton is not just any old dude. I mean, it's Cam Newton. He's a former MVP. Do you think about bringing him in the event that Jared Goff gets hurt?
Well, you want to have a stable backup quarterback. Clearly, they didn't feel that Blake Bortles was stable enough, and he gave them what they wanted as a backup spot. You get a chance to see him all year long, and at the end of the day, you don't – you know, it's just a guy that wasn't good fit. The problem with bringing in Cam Newton, it's not a bad idea. It's a risky idea. The risk factor is – that the moment that Jared Goff has a roller coaster type game or two, and let's say Jared Goff starts off okay, then he starts to go slow, and there's some throws that he misses in games that they lose that look like he could, if he would have just did this, they could have won. And then all of a sudden he starts off a certain way. Now ESPN, Fox, NBC, LA Times, Daily News, Orange County Register, all of these people start to do their little columns in NFL Live and early mornings with Keyshawn and LZ and Travis start talking about it. It starts to fester, and it takes a life of its own. And then now it's like, man, get rid of this dude. We don't need this dude. This dude here, this dude there. We got an MVP. Let's play him. And now you're putting the pressure on Jared Goff, even more pressure. You're applying. He's already got the pressure that you even brought the dude in. Now you're applying more pressure because the media and people are just talking. It becomes a thing. Now the locker room gets separated because you got to play Cam Newton at some point if it's going south. Because then the players will start to say it. Man, they need to be playing Cam. Well, one player inside the locker room, veteran player, says that Cam Newton's the guy. And then another veteran player said, and then you get a dude like Jalen Ramsey saying out loud, man, they need to go with another quarterback. Now all of a sudden you got this tension that you've created a monster. Are you willing to deal with that?
So which of these two things? Because what you just described, key two, is the impact inside the locker room. Let's listen to Field Yates, who joined us earlier this morning, talking about the noise from outside the locker room and inside the community at large.
Be in line with the Rams is that if you think your roster is close to good enough or good enough to compete for the playoffs or maybe even a run in the playoffs, then you don't want to be hamstrung where your quarterback, Jared Goff, has something come up. And next thing you know, you are playing with, you know, basically an incomplete deck of cards because your roster is good enough except for a backup quarterback. I buy into it there. I think there has to be a little bit of a gentle message involved if you were to sign Cam Newton, because not make any mistake, there are going to be a lot of people that the minute the Rams, if they were to sign Cam Newton, would say, good, play him over Jared Goff because he's better than Jared Goff. And, you know, that's probably the rub.
Gentle message, Key. Is there a way to deliver that gentle message that he is just our backup, or the second, like you said, the second that ball goes to the wrong team, it's cut to Cam Newton standing there with a baseball hat on?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he's just our backup don't mean nothing. What is that? How many times have you heard he's here for this or he's here for that? Then you look up and the dude playing, right? I mean, he's here. For veteran leadership, or Cam Newton ain't there for no backup role. Who you think you fooling? You bringing him in, much like, and I went over this before, and I'll go over it again. And you can say whatever you want to say about Donovan McNabb's career. Donovan McNabb is a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback, and if you want to argue, maybe there's some things that's there that will put him in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Where they went outside Michael Vick coming out of prison. That wasn't by coincidence. They wanted to put some pressure on McNabb because he wasn't getting it done the way they needed it to. And they made a decision. We're going to go. Once McNabb got hurt, they went to the decision with Vic, and the rest was history.
Well, it would have to be a conscious decision, right? I mean, you're not bringing him in here without talking exactly what you just mentioned, that if you bring him in, his mere presence adds pressure to Jared Goff. That whether or not he's the right fit, whether or not you'd have to use him, just him being in that uniform changes everything for number 16.
It's different than bringing in
Blake Bortles.
Blake Bortles. Blake Bortles ain't no damn Cam Newton. That wasn't even a Blake, I'd rather have Jared Goff throw with his left hand than have Blake Bortles throw with his right. So you start to look at that presence, that power that Cam comes with. When he walks into the room, that locker room gravitating toward him. There's players in that locker room that will roll with him.
They just pull the trigger. If you're having that conversation.
But I don't know. Are they having a conversation? I don't know. I don't know if they're having a conversation.
But that's my point. If they're having a conversation about do we do this, then you need to just pull the trigger and just go ahead and go in a different direction. Because what you don't want to have happen is that you have this scenario that you're painting, Key, one in which there's a split in the locker room, one in which the media is putting extra pressure in a situation where there wasn't none previously. You're literally sabotaging your season if you do this without having the fortitude to go all the way with it. You can't half-ass it, because if you half-ass it, you're going to derail your entire season.
Well, I think what you see here, though, LZ, is very sensitive, walking on soft sand, not trying to put a dent in it. You're trying to figure it out. This is not a snap decision. It's a figure-out decision. Now, do I think that the Rams are going to start the season with a dude from the AAF or whatever that league was?
That's right.
Do I honestly think that they're going to start the season with him as Jared Goff backup? No. Now, who else is out there? I don't know right off the top of my head.
Josh McCown.
They're not starting the season with that dude as that backup. They're not going to do that.
Well, they can go with like a Josh McCown or anyone else they can go with. I mean, it's not – to me – who the other backup is isn't that big of a deal as much as what happens to your team if you put in a starter masquerading as a backup, which is what Cam Newton would be. That's the real your season.
You can do that as long as the quarterback that's your, you know, real starter is a dude like Drew Brees, because Teddy Bridgewater's a starting quarterback in that league. We saw it before he got hurt and had to bounce around a little bit, and we saw it when he came in relief of Drew Brees when he got hurt against the Rams.
True, but Teddy Bridgewater was not and is not Cam Newton.
No.
So what happens?
And Jared Goff isn't Drew Brees. It's both sides get more towards the middle.
Yeah, but if you're the New Orleans Saints, you cannot bring in Cam Newton.
Right.
You can only bring in Jameis Winston or Teddy Bridgewater. If you the Rams, you can bring in Cam Newton and anybody else, because you're not 100% sold, despite giving Jared Goff the money when you gave it to him. You're not right now today. Your mindset has changed. You're not 100% sold like you were. Publicly, you may say, yeah, he's our quarterback. That guy, he led us to the Super Bowl 4 straight years in a row. You can give us all the lip service you want. But in that room, you're not sold. That's why you bring in a guy like Cam Newton. Even though you're bringing him in and saying he's our number two, doesn't mean that he ain't going to be your number one before the season ends.
Sam Smith is the author of The Jordan Rules. He's going to join us. You've seen him all over the Last Dance documentary. He's going to join us at 9:30. What will we see in episodes 7 and 8 that's coming up on Sunday night? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on ESPN 710. So you guys going to get up at 2 a.m. before our show to watch a little KBO, a little Korean baseball on ESPN that started this morning?
No.
But you, Keith?
I don't know nobody who's playing. If I knew somebody was playing, I would.
Dan Straley, who pitched in the big leagues for a while, he's
again,
on one of the
again,
teams.
Again, I don't know nobody who's playing.
Dude, I'll be honest. I'm not going to get up at 2 a.m. to watch it, but if it were on at 10 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock at night, I would absolutely watch it, because I'm watching the highlight between the Dinos and the Lions right now, and just seeing baseball being played, I'm there for it, man. Give it to me as often as possible, other than at 2 a.m.
Yeah, I'm not there with you yet, Travis. I'm still addicted right now to like classic NBA TV, classic matches on the Tennis Channel, and like 1001 books that are behind me.
I have watched so much classic stuff over the last 2 months. I've hit my saturation point. I loved it. I watched a million old Dodger games, but I need some baseball in my life, some live baseball. Q, you watching any classic stuff?
According to someone, who was that that said the baseball is coming back soon? Which guy was that? Somebody just said
Mitch McConnell. Yeah, he said he wants it back soon. No.
A player said that he heard that baseball – it's a player who said he's got inside information that they're going to start on June 17th, I believe. Spring training starts back up either June 1st or June 17th, and the league is to start back July 1st.
And I'll take it right now.
Yeah, who the heck was that?
I didn't see that. I missed that.
Let's keep talking. I'll find it. Don't you ever worry.
Episode 7 and 8, Last Dance, coming up Sunday night, 6 o'clock. You can get caught up on 1 through 6 on the ESPN app and the ESPN on demand as well. And we're at the point in the Michael Jordan story where he leaves the NBA to go play minor league baseball. And I'm just curious how much time they may spend on the varying, you know, whether we believe them or not, put that aside for a second. How much do you think we'll see the discussion about all the rumors as to why he left?
You know, I think we'll see some little bit of it, and the rumors are what they are, and I'm never one to dive into certain type of rumors. When you start saying that he left because he had gambling issues or his father was murdered and he wanted to get away from it or the league gave him a silent suspension, all of those sort of things, those are theories that's out there. I have to believe what he says, and what he says is that's not true. He said he just got tired of the media and he wanted to go try between him and his father. They've always had this baseball infatuation. That's what I have to believe, because I can't believe that Michael would be lying on his father. That to me is always going to stick. You know, a guy like that lying on his dad, I mean, like, it just don't sound right to me.
I don't know what all the elements are that got him to the answer that he got to. All I know is from everything that I've seen reported and things that we've seen documented, it seems that we're missing some factors and some connective tissue because it seemed rather abrupt. And this notion that the media contributed to, you know, him deciding to leave, I just find that ridiculous. Now I'm not in his head.
Ridiculous on who part, mine or his?
If that was the true reason for him, I find that to be a ridiculous rationale. But with that being said, it's his rationale and in his life. And if he decided that's what he needed to do, then that's what he needed to do. But from the outside looking in, I just find that there's some things missing from the story.
Well, if you look at it, Coach, the one thing that Michael was saying along, he kept saying that they're going to run him out of the game. Now, does that mean that he was setting it up, that he had already got word from the league that he was going to be suspended and he was setting it up to make it look that way? I mean, that's a lot of what ifs, and that's a lot of conspiracy theories. You can certainly see where he was getting tired of the media. You could see it. You could see it. You could see it in his face, those photos, those videos, the interviews. You could tell that it was getting to him. He froze y'all out for like 3 weeks.
Why you keep saying y'all like you're not on radio?
Well, I'll be honest.
Radio is different. Radio is different than print.
Watching it last weekend and seeing the way that the media responded to him being at the casino and the entire dynamic of Michael Jordan with the media after that moment, I didn't remember it like that. I remember it was a big deal at the time, but I didn't remember that. I don't remember him going silent for a couple of weeks. I don't remember any of that part. And I forgot that the relationship had soured like that, the way that it had. And the idea of the media contributing to it makes more sense to me now, 20 years after the fact, than it did at the time.
Listen, if he says that's the way he felt, that's the way he's felt, and, you know, it is what it is. But again, I just find it kind of crazy that a person who built their entire life being in the public eye, basically, decides, I'm going to step back, but I'm still going to be out. Like, if you're going to step back because you're tired of the media, you don't go play another sport. The media's not going to go anywhere. We're just going to follow you.
So yeah, but it ain't going to be. But it's not. But it's not going to be the. But it's not going to be the same, though, LZ. You're going to get a handful of. You're going to get a handful of dudes trying to go to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
It was more than a handful, kid.
Yeah, you're going to get a handful.
We sent the whole. It was just him.
I mean, by double A baseball standards, it was a full blown media circus. I mean,
no, by double A baseball standards, but it's not the same as when you're in the NBA.
If I'm tired of drinking Diet Pepsi. Drinking less Diet Pepsi is one thing. Stopping drinking Diet Pepsi is another. And if you're
telling me, how about no drinking at all?
Well, that's my point. He still was drinking Diet Pepsi when he went to the freaking baseball. If you are tired of the media, then just stay out of the spotlight.
But I could be tired of basketball media. I could be tired of looking at Sam Smith. I could be tired of talking to LZ Granderson. I could be tired of talking to Travis Rogers. I could be done with that Chicago stuff.
It's like when Michael Jackson. It's like when Michael Jackson had that song "Leave Me Alone," but kept doing all the stuff.
Just leave me alone.
If you want to leave, if you want us to leave you alone, then stop showing up and doing all this stuff. Stop doing all the publicity. You can't get have it both ways. So that's why I find it hard to believe with Michael Jordan. If you truly are sick of the media, why in the hell are you playing baseball? We're not going to like not cover baseball all of a sudden. In
just
fact,
leave me alone.
Like, it just didn't make any sense to me. That's all.
I like how you phrase it. There just seems to be a piece of this that we don't know and probably never will know.
What
we do know doesn't add up. What he says doesn't make a ton of sense. That what did we spend a huge part of the show on yesterday? Michael Jordan's competitiveness, right? That he just can't walk away from an opportunity to compete. And he's going to go leave the ultimate competition, the NBA, to go goof around in double-A baseball. It just doesn't make a ton of sense.
London, let's toss quarters for money.
How much you got? How much does she have? All right.
Go get two quarters. We're going to toss them for $20 a piece. You got the money.
Sam Smith, who wrote the book, The Jordan Rules, who covered that Bulls team for years and years and years. He's going to join us coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
All right, so we've been talking a ton about Michael Jordan and The Last Dance for the last several weeks. Episodes 7 and 8 coming up on Sunday at 6 o'clock out here on the West Coast. Joining us right now is somebody that you have seen in the documentary. He is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Jordan Rules. Sam Smith joins us now on The Morning Show. Sam, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good to talk to you.
How you doing, man? Everything good,
Everything's good, except there's some sort of virus going around. So I heard something about it on TV. So
I know, right?
What's going on with that?
We've been sheltering in place, but at the same time, we also have been watching The Last Dance. And somebody on this other end of the phone has been a prominent role in The Last Dance. I wonder who that is.
Yeah, they're risking their ratings putting me on TV. So I think it's been a pretty bold and brave show. But yeah, as it happened, you know, actually I've been sort of in the same place. I covered the Bulls, got to Chicago in 1979 for the Chicago Tribune, and I left in 2008, and now I write on a website for the Chicago Bulls. So I'm basically in the same place for 30 some years or 40, however long it is, and the circus just kind of came back to my house, you know. I've been standing at the same place, and here goes the circus again. Oh, yeah, Michael Jordan. I dealt with this 30 years ago. So, no, it's been great. It's a terrific documentary, obviously. It's brought back what it's done. You know, and Keyshawn, you would know from, you know, being in locker rooms, and when I wrote this book, The Jordan Rules, it wasn't so much to, you know, expose the underside, but just to open up the door to fans who always want to know, you know, what are you guys talking about? What do you say? You know, and it's not that great mystery, but it you know, two things to me stood out. One, you know, it's sort of then behind the scenes look of what it's really like for, you know, a lot. And people for the first time, a whole generation has got to see Michael like we knew him in the 80s, this, you know, open, friendly, you know, funny guy to hang around. But the people who know him best, which is a limited group because he, you know, he's been so reclusive once he got so famous in the early 90s, you know, and to see this sort of, you know, this innocence in a sense, but this competitive nature, the challenge, you know, every moment of the day is a competition about something, whether it's a conversation or, you know, tossing quarters. I, you know, I saw all those things in the 80s, and it was great. It was always great fun to be around. It was, you know, it was sort of a contest all day long, and sort of life in a frat house for the whole day. But and people, I think it's been great that people have gotten the chance to see that, where, you know, in the last couple of decades, Michael sort of removed himself from view.
Sam, there's a clear delineation between when Michael Jordan felt like the media was on his side and when he felt like it's turned. And in a lot of ways, you are considered the linchpin in this turning of the narrative. Looking back, do you think that the media did anything wrong when it was discovered that Michael Jordan had spent some time during the playoffs in the casino?
Actually, I thought that one was really off base, but it becomes an accumulation of things. In the Jordan rules, I really didn't write anything about gambling other than, you know, the little stuff that went on the side, shooting free throws. You know, Jordan used to say, well, one of the things he would do, we were in the airport, we traveled commercial back then, and he would be betting on everything, you know, just small bets, $10, like they showed the thing about sitting down at Paxson's table and playing for a dollar just to beat him. It was about winning for Michael all the time. And so we'd get in we literally were waiting for our luggage, players too. Everybody carried their own luggage. And he would pay off the baggage handlers behind, you know, when the guy was pulling the truck away from the plane, to put down his bag first, and then he was betting on it with the other players down while we were waiting for the bags, and everyone, hey, how'd your bag always come out first? And so, you know, it's just sort of the way it was, simple sort of stuff. And, you know, and then he fell into some stuff, which was unfortunate. Actually, when the Jordan rules came out, it went in, but literally that weekend, they were supposed to go to the White House after winning the title, and Jordan said he had a family vacation he was going on. And what he really was doing was going to the gambling weekend, and unbeknownst to him, with a convicted felon and a bail bondsman who was financing it, who got murdered shortly after, and Jordan's check was in his property. So that's where all his gambling stuff sort of started. And you know, look, if you go and you're betting $100,000 to get in, it's not with school teachers, so there's going to be other people in it. And Michael realized that later, and he acknowledged it in one of the episodes I saw. But then as it built, and this guy in, you know, San Diego, I think, came out when he welched on the golf bets thing, and then so it built to ridiculous proportions with, I remember that, it was in the New York series in 93 when they got down 2-0. He went to Atlantic City. Well, yeah, you know, players just did that. It was not illegal. Allen Iverson went to Atlantic City to gamble after every game he played at home in his whole career. And so I remember the New York Times, of all places, was horrified by this and wrote a big story and how he got in at 2. And somebody asked me about it, and I said, really, I'm shocked as well. He usually gets in at 5. You know, and then he gets up at 8 and plays 36 holes, and then he scores 52 points. So what are you talking about? But that helped, you know, that was one of the many things that helped push him away, because he had been so accommodating. You know, he'd been basically like magic, you know, as far as accommodating and friendly and open to everybody and talkative and would do interviews for hours with anyone who showed up. And it was like, hey, after all this is how you guys treat me? And I think that was one of the elements in 93 that led him to leave.
Sam Smith joining us, the author of The Jordan Rules, on the Sprint People's Hotline. And Sam, you know, you mentioned it in the episode that aired over the weekend, that when it came out, you did not expect it to have maybe the resonance and the impact that it did. Did you know that Michael was going to be pissed when it finally hit?
I really didn't think so. I guess I was naive about it, and partially is, you know, living with the situation. But we all knew the story, and all the and the stories came from his teammates. You know, one thing about the Jordan rules, it wasn't like league sources; it was players were on the record being quoted about things, and so. You know, and they were winning. You know, this all was going on for several years, and it didn't seem to be affecting them, and they kept getting better. So, you know, the narrative when the book came out, because, you know, it was new to everybody else, but, you know, it's kind of like when you're going through something, it's part of your life, and people react with exclaim to it, you're surprised, you're taken aback, because that's part of your existence. And so, you know, the players weren't upset by any of the revelations or anything, because they knew him. In fact, it took a lot of pressure off some of the other players, because, you know, now Michael was sort of, you know, in the spotlight, having to be on the defensive a little bit, and instead of being on the offensive with, you know, punching out Will Perdue in practice because he didn't set good screens, and taking Horace Grant's food away on the plane back from Detroit because he played a bad game and he didn't deserve to eat, and, you know, all this stuff, you know, just kid stuff that sort of Michael did. So I probably didn't realize, but at the same time, I felt, you know, I liked Michael a lot and respected him. He wrote, I know in the Jordan rules, I thought he was by far the best player, and this is in the, you know, prime Magic, and, you know, Larry's toward the end, but Isaiah, Dominique, you know, great players still, you know, there then as well. And, you know, told a lot of sympathetic stories. You know, I remember when, you know, Kobe's memorial came up and Michael was there and he was crying and people were shocked. He said, well, I've never seen this. And I know I wrote a section in there about how he always used to greet the kids that they mentioned in the documentary, you know, the kids who were ill. And I remember he greeted one girl and spent like a half hour with her before a game on Easter Sunday. And she was dressed up so nice. And he, afterwards, she walked away, and I was nearby, and he was crying, and he said, how did I expect me to play a game after something like this? And so I felt there was, you know, loads of humanity in it, but you know how that media is. You know, they take things out of context. I don't know if you've ever dealt with that before.
Right? That's the thing that I try to get through their heads a lot. The media sometimes does some things and says some things. They're not always right, and they're not always wrong. You got to be fair all the way around. When you look at Jordan and you look at where things are today and where they were when you were covering him with the Chicago Bulls, a lot has come up about the Isaiah Thomas, you know, kind of freezing him out of the Olympics type situation. Is this solely on Michael Jordan, or was it the decisions made by the Olympic Committee, but it fell in Jordan's lap?
Yeah, I think that's actually fair. That's actually accurate to what probably happened. You know, Michael changes his mind a lot, as he does, you know, as anyone has a right to. You know, he came back and played. He was never going to play for anyone other than Phil Jackson, and then he played for Doug Collins in Washington. So, and in 92, he was really worn out. He didn't want to be on that dream team. 91-92 series, you know, his acclaim growing, and two straight years playing the final. He was just exhausted. Now with all this gambling stuff and my book, so a lot of annoyances. He just wants to get away, and he played in the 84 Olympics, and he said, hey, I played. Somebody else, you can't have a dream team, which is basically a fashion show of your greatest players. It wasn't the best players. You know, Bird couldn't play anymore. He was retired. Magic was out of the league for a year on HIV. Christian Leitner's on the team. I mean, wasn't the 12 best players in the world, or in the NBA even. So he's not playing. You can't have that. You can't have your worldwide display. And so I think what the committee did, knowing, you know, Jordan's disdain toward the Pistons and the rivalry, and you still, you know, 30 years later, he still can't get past it. You know, he still had to jump on Isaiah Thomas 30 years later. You know, he's not getting over, you know, Michael holds grudges pretty well. And so I think when Rod Thorne's been quoted recently saying, you know, Michael never brought it up, I agree. I think Michael would have played with anybody as much as whatever. Michael's thing was the basketball, and he, you know, look, on that team, I think John Stockton was on that team. I'm pretty sure Michael spent no more than 30 seconds talking to John Stockton in any of the 4 weeks they were out. So, you know, he was still going to be with Magic and Charles and his buddies. Look, on that team, Karl Malone was on that team with Magic, and Karl Malone had said, you know, people shouldn't play with Magic after he was diagnosed with the HIV because it might be spread, you know, like crazy stuff that went on back then. So Karl and Magic were hardly close. And I think the committee, thinking about how we're going to get this guy to be on the team, feared that he might say no because Isaiah, which he probably wouldn't have, I believe, wouldn't have. And then I think they were the ones who kept him off.
Can you talk a little bit about Krause and just the way that he was viewed, obviously not favorably during the Doc, but just in general within the organization? How was he viewed?
Well, Jerry's a longer story. One of the things I wrote about Jerry once is I said, hello, he lied. And so it was difficult. It was difficult on a lot of levels to get along with Jerry. I don't think they're depicting him inaccurately, the views of those around him. But what Jerry never could understand or accept and got him is that you're the architect of one of the greatest sports franchises in the history of the NBA. Just sit back and accept the plaudits for doing that. Don't try to be so hard one of the guys. I mean, literally, I remember the players would be in the locker room, you know, getting a massage or something, and Jerry, who was not in particularly good shape, maybe you've seen some of the photos, would just come in and take off his clothes in front of everybody and lay down and say, I want my massage now. And look, any organization I've ever worked for, people I know, no group on their spare time when the employees are out loves the boss to be around in the middle of it. And, you know, Jerry just never could get that. And then you're dealing with the guy with the sharpest tongue and the quickest wit in the country. So Michael just eviscerated him, and nobody else would ever say much. Pippen at one time, you know, in the last year when he was losing it and really mad about his money and everything, he was pretty abusive then. But mostly it was just Michael playing with him. But Jerry had really almost no sense of humor. And you know a kid like that, usually the one kid who's trying to hang around with everybody and trying to be one of the cool guys but doesn't get any of the
doesn't
jokes.
Work. And, it does
yeah,
not work.
The more you push, the worse it gets. And Jerry kept pushing. And he was the boss. And he kept thinking, well, because I'm the boss, they have to like me. No, wrong. It works the other opposite way.
Wrong. Sam Smith, the author of The Jordan Rules, best-selling author of The Jordan Rules, joining us here. Sam, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank
good
you, sir.
Good to with you guys. Take care.
All right, Sam. Uh-huh.
All right, you too. We're back good. With Crosstalk with George Sedano. That is coming up next.
Happy Cinco de Mayo, everybody. Happy Cinco de Mayo. George, how are you going to celebrate today?
Well, it is Taco Tuesday, too, which is, you know, coincidental, of course. We got a little shrimp taco action today. We've got some Casamigos. You know, we'll figure it out tonight.
Over ice, with lime, with straight up, like what are we figuring out?
So I do over ice. Mrs. Sedano likes to use it in with a margarita, not like a frozen margarita, just a regular margarita. So you know, that's how we roll around here. I don't like to dilute my alcohol. Just give it to me as straight as possible. You know, perhaps a little ice, that's about it.
Ortega shells or you going
regular
Ortega
tortillas.
Or regular tortillas?
I think we have regular tortillas, yes.
Yeah,
and we also do
tortillas.
cilantro and onion. We don't do the gringo style with the cheese and all that stuff.
That's right.
And
no, cilantro and a little lime, little salsa. That's the correct way to do it.
Yeah. I just want to make sure you ain't falling in the LZ's category with the hard shells out the box. That's all.
It's all about the crunch.
I mean,
always about the crunch.
What? Well, there you go. That is true. I mean, you could, LZ, you could just do the soft shell and then just buy tortilla chips. You know that, right?
Well, now
you do that too.
Now I'm trying to kill two tacos with one stone. You asking me to make multiple purchases.
Well, that's sort of what's going to happen anyway. I'm going to do street tacos to a degree, and I'm going to have my chips and my sauce and my guacamole and everything else. So I get the crunch with that, and then I got my soft shells that'll be, you know, cooked a certain way and nice, you know, chicken in there or whatever, shrimp, pulled pork, whatever we decide to put in there.
So when was the last time we had a Cinco de Mayo without a fight? That's the other thing that just kind of feels weird.
It has been a long time. Yeah. I mean, is ESPN? I would run a fight tonight if I were ESPN, just to do it. Like maybe, but I think that's on the schedule tonight.
Tonight is a football game, huh?
No, tonight's the Dave Roberts stealing second base when he was with the Red Sox tonight. That's the game I've seen. On there. Oh my God, that feels like a million years ago too. That Dave Roberts is now the multiple time, you know, the Dodger manager, division champion manager. That feels like a lifetime ago.
I'm trying to remember.
I mean, Dave had a goatee back then, remember?
I don't remember that.
Totally goatee back then. That was so long. I mean, that was a long time ago though. They're gonna show that game, huh?
They're gonna that's the game that's on tonight.
There's a lot of
that game changed the entire series.
But you know, there's a lot of games. There's so many games that you can go to. I was thinking about this the other night when they were showing the Dallas Cowboys and the Buffalo Bills game. As I kept saying to myself, there's so many games in different sports that you can go to that people are forgotten about that would bring back so many great fond memories. I wasn't on this team, these two teams were not Super Bowl caliber winning teams, but the New York Jets in 2000, I wasn't on this particular team, and the Miami Dolphins played against each other, George, and it went into like 3 a.m. in the morning.
And that was the Jumbo Elliott touchdown game.
Touchdown,
I remember
at the end of the game on a Monday night game.
Yeah,
that to me is like, that's what they should be putting on. Like, let me see that game. It lasted forever. And it was at the end, an offensive lineman scoring a touchdown with big blue eyes to cap it off and win it all.
Yeah, I remember it well. I was at a bar watching it, and the Dolphins were big in that game. The Jets came back down like a couple of touchdowns, like three touchdowns, I want to say.
The Sedano Show is coming up next. Everybody survive. Cinco de Mayo and Taco Tuesday. We'll see you here bright and early, 6 o'clock tomorrow morning.
For show, facts.
Buenos-